800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
A parent in Virginia is apparently losing his patience regarding local schools being closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. In a video that has gone viral on social media, the father can be seen addressing members of the Loudoun County, Virginia school board.
You're a bunch of cowards hiding behind our children as an excuse for keeping schools closed. You think you're some sort of martyrs because of the decisions you're making when the statistics do not lie that the vast majority of the population is not at risk from this virus. The garbage workers who pick up my freaking trash risk their lives every day more than anyone in this school system. Figure it out or get off the podium. Because you know what? There are people like me and a lot of other people out there who will gladly take your seat and figure it out. It's not a high bar. Raise the freaking bar!
Schools in Loudoun County have been closed for in-person learning since March. Some people thought the extended lockdowns would bring a little baby boom. The opposite happened, with birth rates falling across the United States. Florida saw an 8% drop, with Ohio declining 7% and Arizona sliding 5%. Demographer Lyman Stone wasn't surprised. He says lockdowns communicate worry and a negative outlook on society, which motivates pessimism about fertility. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
On today's program, I'll be talking about when is the right time to fire a client and how to do it, why advertisers are pulling out of the Super Bowl broadcast, and I'll have 10 questions to ask to weed out the bad candidates during a job interview. It's Thursday, January 28th, 2021, and I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business. Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, and this program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. We are broadcasting live from our brand new, brand spanking new studios here in the offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. If you get a chance, stop in and take a tour of the new building, the Unity Bank Educational Center that's in the back here. This is going to be a great resource for businesses here in Hunterdon County. I'm looking forward to when we're able to start having meetings again, but here in the chamber, and then just the different ways that you'll be able to use this building and use this center to help your business. Hopefully, have some lecture series coming in. I think it's going to be great. If you're currently listening on HunterdonChamberRadio.com, we thank you. If you're listening on WHCRDB, we thank you again. And, of course, if you're watching the live stream on Facebook, thank you very much. And don't forget that at any time on the live stream, if you want to comment on something that I'm talking about, you can feel free to do it. I'll be able to access your comments via my iPad. So hopefully if you hear something that you like last week, a gentleman talking about one of the stories that I was discussing, he commented in, and it was a good add to the program. So by all means, feel free to do that. As we got back into doing the program, I said something's missing. I used to do a market recap, and I realized that, you know, as you listen to this program on the archive, the market recap may not be timely. So I'm eliminating that. But one thing that I think I'd like to bring back is the business quote of the week. So we're going to do that again here on Taking Care of Business. And the business quote of the week is brought to you each week at this time by Crown Trophy of Flemington. And this week it comes to us from Dave Thomas, who is the founder of Wendy's. He said, "What do you need to start a business? Three simple things. Know your product better than anyone, know your customer, and have a burning desire to succeed." So those are the words of Dave Thomas, the founder of Wendy's restaurants, and I think it goes without saying that if you know your product, you know your customer, and you have that burning desire to succeed, you will be successful. One of the things that I'm noticing in talking with business owners, and I'm getting a lot of phone calls in my consulting business, is how many people after COVID or through COVID their burning desire is starting to burn out and flame out. And, you know, you have to come up with that fight, that drive, that energy that's going to make you want to get up every day and go to work. So, you know, whatever it takes, even if you have to shut the business down for a couple days, recharge your batteries, I totally get it. You know, it's not the end of the world if you do that. Just put a note on the door that says, you know, you'll be closed on these days. If you have customers that need to make a pickup, let them know what's going on. And but get your batteries recharged, because as we come out of this pandemic and as we start to get more orders and make more, you know, bringing more people back on staff and things like that, as we get back into that normal routine, which I think is going to start happening in spring, late spring, you're going to want to make sure your batteries are recharged. So make sure you take care of yourself as well. As we get into the program, many advertisers have announced that they are leaving or not going to be advertising in the Super Bowl this year. And one of those is Budweiser, which is joining Coke and Pepsi in sitting out the Super Bowl this year. Now, Pepsi will have the halftime show, but normal ads just won't be there for them. So this is giving the opportunity for other advertisers to step into their place. But for the first time since 1983, when Anheuser-Busch used all of its ad time to introduce a beer called Bud Light, the beer giant isn't advertising its iconic Budweiser brand during the Super Bowl. No puppies, no Clydesdales. Instead, it's donating that money that it would have spent to the ads on coronavirus vaccine awareness efforts. Anheuser-Busch still has 4 minutes of advertising during the game for its other brands, including Bud Light, Bud Light Seltzer, Lemonade, Michelob Ultra, and Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer. Those are some of the hottest sellers, particularly among younger viewers. But the decision to not do an anthemic Budweiser ad, which over nearly four decades has made America icons of frogs chirping Budweiser, guys screaming, "What's up?" And, of course, the Budweiser Clydesdale showcases the caution with which some advertisers are approaching the first COVID-era Super Bowl. We have a pandemic that is casting a pall over just about everything, said Paul Argenti, a Dartmouth College professor of corporate communication. It's hard to feel the exuberance and excitement that people normally would. The Anheuser-Busch move follows a similar announcement from PepsiCo, which won't be advertising its biggest brand, Pepsi, in order to focus on its sponsorship of the halftime show. It will, however, still advertise Mountain Dew and Frito-Lay products. Other veteran Super Bowl advertisers like Coke, Audi, and Avocados from Mexico are also sitting out the game altogether. These big brand absences are just one more way Super Bowl 55 will look very different from previous years. Attendance at the big game will be limited to just 22,000 people, or about a third of the more than 65,890-seat capacity at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay. And Super Bowl parties will be more likely smaller affairs with pods or families. I think the advertisers are correctly picking up on this being a riskier year for the Super Bowl, said Charles Taylor, who is the marketing professor at Villanova University. With COVID and economic uncertainty, people aren't necessarily in the best mood to begin with. There's a risk associated with messages that are potentially too light, and at the same time, there's also a risk associated with doing anything too somber. The pandemic has cut sharply into sales for many Super Bowl advertisers, and with pricey ads costing an estimated $5.5 million for 30 seconds during the February 7th broadcast on CBS, some may have decided it's just not worth it this year. Coca-Cola, for example, has been hard hit since half of its sales come from stadiums, movie theaters, and other usually crowded places that have been closed during the pandemic. It announced layoffs in December and said that it would not advertise this year to ensure that it's investing in the right resources during these unprecedented times. To fill the void of missing advertiser space, newcomers like TikTok, rival Triller, online freelance marketplace Fiverr, and online car seller Vroom are rushing in to take their place. Returning brands will include M&M's, Pringles, Toyota, and many others. Companies that are running ads this year face a number of challenges. Super Bowl ads are usually developed months in advance and shot in the fall, meaning that ads airing in 2 weeks were shot under costly pandemic conditions and without any idea how the presidential election would turn out. That further complicates the already delicate process of striking a tone that acknowledges what's happening with the world, managing to either entertain or tug at viewer heartstrings, and finding a way to tie it all back to their brand. It's a tough year to do an ad, Argenti said. It will be a good year for creative companies who figure out how to thread that needle. Monica Rusgy, who's Budweiser's vice president of marketing, said the brand is still calculating how much it will spend on vaccine awareness, but she said it will be a multi-million dollar commitment that includes donating airtime throughout this year for the nonprofit Ad Council and COVID Collaborative's COVID-19 Vaccine Education Initiative. Budweiser will strive to have a marketing presence around the big game. Starting Monday, the brand will air an ad that celebrates resilience during the pandemic, including a socially distanced birthday parade and athletes in Black Lives Matter jerseys. The ad, narrated by actress and director Rashida Jones, ends with healthcare workers getting vaccinated and talks about Budweiser's donation. In the era of social media and digital advertising, brands aren't limited to running ads during just one event. Since consumers can see them online everywhere from Facebook and Twitter to YouTube, Budweiser's Rusty said, but Budweiser's Super Bowl step back also won't be long-term. The Super Bowl is the most important popular sports event, aside from the World Cup, that anybody is going to see, added Darton Sargenti. An event that draws that many people to the advertising is never going to go away. Viewership is way down in the NFL this year as a result of their stance on Black Lives Matter and racial equality, which also may have been a factor in some companies' decisions to not air ads during the big game. And once again this year, as I've done, I think this is my 10th year, I'll be on USA Today's Ad Meter panel. And what we do is we watch every commercial, score it on a score of 1 to 10, and then when you hear the next day which was the most popular ad during the Super Bowl, that's as a result of the Ad Meter panel and what we think is a good commercial. And sometimes it's, did it make you laugh? Did it make you, you know, feel something by pulling on those heartstrings? Did it convey the product messaging properly? So I'm looking forward to being a part of that again. I had an idea for the NFL, and I've talked to a couple of people about this and put it up on my Facebook page last night. After the break, I'm going to come back and tell you what that proposal is for the NFL and how it can restore their image moving into the 2021-22 season. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the 100 in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington and Gano Enterprises, also based here in Flemington. And wanted to get back into the program and follow up on our earlier story about the Super Bowl advertising. Now, this year was a rough year for the Super Bowl, or for the NFL. In May, when you had the killing of George Floyd and all of the racial unrest, the NFL had made the decision that they were going to put the names of victims on the back of helmets. The sideline around the stadium would talk about ending racism or finding a solution for racism. And it turned a lot of people off that were just trying to watch a football game. A lot of comments on social media, I'm done with the NFL, I'm not going to watch football anymore. This isn't what I, you know, tune into the NFL for. So people just felt like they were kind of alienated from just being able to watch a football game. And, you know, so they stopped watching. I've talked to a lot of people since they made those posts, and they literally have not watched football all year long. Even one gentleman, or actually two in my fantasy football pool, one gentleman didn't play a game, and the other one left the pool altogether. So these are guys that are huge sports fans and just decided, I am done with the NFL. So I was thinking the other day, and I don't know why I do this, but sometimes the brain just turns on and won't stop. And I was thinking the other day of what could the NFL do to bring people back and still handle social causes. So I put up a posting last night of what I thought the NFL could do. This year, again, they supported Black Lives Matter by putting the victim's name on the helmet and various messages about racism painted throughout the sidelines. So here's my proposal for next year for the NFL. The NFL season is 17 weeks long. So what if the league chose a different cause each week? So instead of a season dedicated to one cause, dedicate a week. So maybe week one could be racial injustice, and the next game could be, say, diabetes awareness, and the next week could be missing and exploiting children, or next week could be autism awareness or domestic violence and so on throughout the whole season. And as they put their schedule out next year, they should indicate week one is juvenile diabetes research. Week two is Autism Awareness Week in the NFL. Whether they include the logos of these organizations on helmets, jerseys, or somewhere on cleats, it wouldn't matter. But also leave an opportunity for people to make a donation during the game by visiting a certain website or a portal. So is that something that you think you would support? Is it something that, even though, you know, like October is typically Breast Cancer Awareness Month and the players wear, you know, pink attachments, to whether it's a towel or sweatbands or cleats or something like that, is it something where if you saw it coming every week, you'd be more inclined to tune in if it was a cause that was near and dear to your heart? So let me know by leaving a comment here on the bottom of the page, and or you can email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com. To take it one step further, I'm writing up this proposal, and I'm going to send it to Commissioner Roger Goodell. And one of my customers is the president of the Professional Football Writers Association of America. And he's getting me the name and address of somebody with whom might be the better person within the NFL league offices to send this to. But I think we can't, you know, all we can do is try and see whether or not this is something that the league would adopt for next year. But I think it's a good plan, and hopefully it's something that the NFL would possibly adopt. So now we get into the main theme of today's show, and that is there ever a good time to fire a customer? And I will tell you that when I first heard this term several years ago, I wasn't so sure that it made sense. You know, when I would hear business owners bragging, oh, I just fired a customer. I was like, what? You know, why are we firing customers? We need every customer we can get. And over the 12 years that I've owned my own business and even working for other people, I've noticed that some customers simply aren't worth your time. And the fact is, you don't have to spin your wheels servicing impossible clients. And that's one of the hard-won lessons that Vicki Klayman made sure to impart to sales reps who worked for her. She watched them struggle with difficult customers who would call them at all hours of the day and night, and they'd work overtime to get all these quotes together for them. And you have to know when to cut them loose. One sales rep had a customer with a distinct pattern. They'd request numerous ideas for a project and then send them back every time, saying they were dissatisfied. And the rep would go through three rounds of brainstorming and quoting before the customer would finally pick something, and then would ask for a lower price. And sometimes salespeople get desperate, and in order to just make the sale, they'll agree to the lower price. I had a woman today who was looking for coffee mugs, and she had gotten a price online, which price per mug was less than my price for the mugs from my wholesaler, and she wanted me to hold that price. I said, I can't do it. So I think we were talking at like $1.08 a mug. I was at $4 a mug. I don't know where this company is, and I could tell that she was having trouble getting a commitment on meeting her in-hands date. I told her it would take me a full 2 days to make 144 mugs because you have to make them one at a time. So she kept coming back. She called me two or three times, and I finally said, look, I can't do this job for anything less than $4 each. And it's probably costing me money at that point, but I figured I'll take the work anyway. So I cut her loose. I said, I don't think I'm the right guy for you. And I did give her the name of a couple of companies she may try to use that could possibly get the job done, but her timeline is super short. So you have to be careful in just taking any sale, because when your profit margin shrinks so low, there's no room for error. There is no room for increased shipping costs or anything else. And so you have to know what your target margin is and stay as close to that as you possibly can. When you're talking about a difficult client, you also want to talk about, again, the profitability. Does it make sense? Are you making enough money to put up with their nonsense? And if not, let them go. And if it's a bad situation, something where you know your company is going to get hurt or you're going to get hurt, nip it in the butt early and withdraw from the contract or the bid altogether. And another thing that you always want to do as a business owner, regardless of who the customer is, regardless of their relationship to you, if you have a customer who's treating your employees poorly, get rid of them, and get rid of them quickly, and explain to them why you're getting rid of them, that you're not going to allow them to abuse your staff, your employees, or you. And sometimes it's a wake-up call to that person, and they realize, hey, you know what? I was acting like an ass there. And other times they don't know that's how they come across. But what this does is it removes the anxiety from your staff of having to deal with this individual, and it also shows that you've got their back. So make sure that you're taking care of your staff above profits. And you know, there's a lot of times when you can look at morale costs, and you know, if you have a staff that's coming in and they're saying, ugh, I got to deal with, you know, Joe Smith, and Joe, they know Joe's a problem person, you have to look at that money, the productivity, and then what I call the morale cost. If it's going to weigh your staff down to the point where they dread doing the work, well, if they dread doing the work for one person, that could carry over into the next. Even if it's the best account you have, it could carry over. So you want to make sure that that morale cost is always taken into effect as well. How do you go about letting a client go? Well, the easiest way is raise your prices. If they are the type of person who's always coming in looking for the lowest price, banging you down, you know, you got to do better, you got to do better, I need it for this price, and you're seeing that profit margin erode, raise your prices, and you'll find one of two things happen. They'll leave, or they'll agree to pay your price, and more than likely you'll find that as your prices increase, so does your clientele base. The other thing to do is you don't want to burn a bridge. You know, explain to them the reasons why. Be firm. Don't get wishy-washy on why you're letting them go. But you have to be very firm about it. And another option would be to refer them to a competitor who does like products that you do. It serves two purposes. The first is you're giving them an option. I can't help you, but maybe XYZ Corporation can. Here's their name. Here's their number. Here's a contact person within that company. if they leave and they go to that company, now it frees up your staff. It increases your morale in your business. And now it's somebody else's problem. Let them deal with it. If they want to work on low margins, if they want to work with an abusive customer, let them go. You have to look at what is the average time in a sale, how much back and forth is there, and are they working your way? And I've, you know, prior to owning my own business, when I was working in the recruiting industry, I would lay out, this is the way our process works. And we can't really deviate from that because it's a proven method and it works very well. But when you started with hiring managers going left, right, center, not following the process, the wheels came off the wagon. So we would have to reel them back and say, no, this is how we have to do this. This is how we have to go through the interview process. This is the background checks I'll be doing. And, you know, again, if it wouldn't work, we might have to let them go. And if it did work, then they, once they saw that the process works, it would work phenomenally well. But make sure they're working your way. You have to be, you're the one who's providing the product, so you be the one to show how the process is going to work. After you've let go of the client, don't look back. Don't feel bad 2 weeks later and call them back saying, did you ever get those mugs you needed? If not, I can help you. Just walk away, put the folder away, and find new clients. And that's one of the reasons why many people don't want to fire a client, because either they don't want to put in the effort and the execution it takes to find new clients, or they feel like they'll never be able to replace that dollar value. You'll decide on what's the best method of letting somebody go. Is it on the phone? Is it in person? Is it via email? You want to figure out what you're going to say, practice it, make sure that you're very firm in your delivery. Again, suggest a friendly competitor, and then just to wrap it up, just reiterate your decision as to why. Particularly when we talk about figuring out what to say, if their treatment of you and your company has been egregious, like they're verbally abusing you or your staff, for example, just tell them straight out that their behavior is unacceptable and that you won't be tolerating it anymore. And if it's more of a growing misalignment, like demands for lower prices and lengthening payment terms, tell them that your team is changing direction and focusing on different niches moving forward. If they push back, again, stick to your guns. But the three areas that you want to pay attention to: are they being abusive to you or your staff? Are they constantly asking for lower prices? Are they changing the payment terms? You've already paid for the material by the time you deliver it. You need to get paid. So if your terms are net 30, don't let them extend it to 45, 60, 90, 120 days. I had one great account that wanted to do business with me, and the woman said, just so you know, we pay all our bills within 90 days. I said, just so you know, you're going to have to find somebody else to do this work. I said, my terms are net 30. If we can't keep it to that, which is a standard business term in every business school, I can't do business with you because I'm not here to finance your organization. And sure enough, the check showed up 30 days later. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100chamberradio.com. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you about goal creation for 2021. It's still not too late to have a good year. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100chamberradio.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The Senate will start working on an aggressive new stimulus package next week.
Congress must pursue a bold and robust course of action to defeat the disease, recover our economy, get our country back to normal.
Senate Majority Leader from New York, Chuck Schumer, saying that they cannot undershoot this effort to address a continuing and urgent situation. Meanwhile, Senate Minority Leader from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell, believes President Trump's sweeping executive orders are not worker-friendly and also will put the brakes on domestic energy production.
Willfully throwing our own people out of work, reducing our domestic energy security, raising costs and prices for working families, all for no meaningful impact on global temperatures.
The number of workers seeking first-time unemployment claims dropped to 847,000 this last week. This is USA Radio News.
Why do you think bank presidents and jewelry store owners trust ADT to protect their homes and businesses? Because they feel safe, and you can too. How would you like to monitor your home from fire, floods, and yes, robberies without even being there right from your smartphone? That is peace of mind. You may even save money on your homeowner's insurance just by having an ADT system installed. And there's even a money-back guarantee. How about that? We guarantee 100% satisfaction. You have nothing to risk. Why do you think people who have so much to protect trust ADT? Because it works. Call right now for a free quote. We'll even give you a free gift for calling. So pick up your phone and call Protect Your Home, an ADT authorized premier provider now.
800-818-0191. 800-818-0191. 800-818-0191. That's 800-818-0191.
You can feel free to sing along with the intro music every time. Taking Care of Business, Bachman Turner Overdrive, and the name of this program, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. I had a phone call the other day from a gentleman, and we usually get together end of December, beginning of January, and I hadn't heard from him. And he's somebody that I've worked with for a couple of years, so I just wanted to touch base with him. And finally he called, and I said, you know, how's everything going? And he explained how his business has been impacted by the coronavirus and having to let staff go, how he's lost certain accounts. And we kind of just reviewed the last year, where his sales were. He was down about 60% last year. And, you know, so I said, okay, great. All right, 2020 is in the books. You know, you'll have your accountant do your taxes, and then it's over. What are you doing for 2021? And he goes, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, what goals do you have for this year? Where do you want to be in sales? Where do you want to be with employees? Where do you want to be with, you know, new product purchases or anything like that? And he says, to be honest, I haven't given it a thought. I haven't really given it much thought. And I was like, well, you kind of have to. And I said, so basically what you're doing is you've just made a 13th month to the year 2020. And he goes, yeah, I guess I kind of have. I'm just kind of doing what I've been doing for the last, you know, 10 months. Very dangerous way of approaching your business. Goals are there so that we work towards something. It's something to strive for. It's something to, you know, take great pride in when we achieve them. And it's something to look at if you fall short. So this year, when I was setting my goals, I looked at where my sales goal was for last year, realized how short I was in coming to it, and I modified my goal. It's actually less than last year, but it's something that I want to hit. And it, to me, it's doable, but it's going to take a lot more marketing. It's going to take a lot more initiative on my part and a lot more hard work. So I've got to do that. So how do you go about not only creating and setting those goals, but how do you go about achieving them? So the first thing is, you've got to create them. Now, I've talked about this on the program before. Every goal has to be what we call a SMART goal. And SMART is an acronym that stands for specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. You've probably heard that saying a million times in your business career. So goals are part of every aspect of business and life, and they provide a sense of direction, motivation, should provide a clear focus, and clarify importance. So by setting goals, you're providing yourself with a target to aim for. And again, a SMART goal is used to help you in goal setting. It's an acronym that stands for specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. Good idea to write those words down right now. Write down the word SMART, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. So a SMART goal incorporates all those criteria to help focus your efforts and increase the chances of achieving your goal. So what do we mean when we say that a goal is specific? That means it's well-defined, it's clear, and it's unambiguous. What do we mean when we say measurable? You're giving it specific criteria that measures your progress towards accomplishment of that goal. If you say you want to do, let's say, 50,000 in sales in the month of January, that's your goal. What are you going to do to get there? Is it going to be with retained business? Is it going to be new business? How are you going to get there? But you're creating that specific criteria. when we say it's achievable, it's attainable but not impossible to achieve. You're going to have to do a little bit of work. So you don't want to say, if you did 50,000 last January, you don't want to say, I'm going to do 1 million this January, simply because unless you know that you've got huge contracts in the wings, it's probably not going to be attainable. So make it achievable. We talk about realistic. You want it to be within reach. You want it to be realistic, and you want it to be relative to your life purpose or to your business's purpose. So again, that example of 50,000 to 1 million, it's not realistic. You know, 50,000 to 100,000 might be realistic, but you know, you have to know your marketplace to determine whether or not that's going to happen. And timely, you want to have a clearly defined timeline, including a start date and a target date. And that purpose is to create the urgency and to keep you working towards the goal. So if you were to say, this year I want to do $600,000 in sales. If you divide that by four quarters, that means you have to do $150,000 per quarter or $50,000 per month. So you want to keep measuring. At the end of January, where are you? Oh, you're at $40,000. You're $10,000 short of goal. But if you get $60,000 in February, you're back on track. And if you get $50,001 in March, you've met that goal. You're on track for the yearly goal. What you don't want to do is set this and say, I want to do $600,000 in sales, and then wait till November and realize, you're only at $200,000, because now there's no way you're going to make that goal in just 1 month. So when we talk about specific, goals that are specific have a significantly greater chance of being accomplished. And to make a goal specific, you have to use the 5W questions in your consideration. Who's involved in the goal? What do I want to accomplish? Where is this goal to be achieved? When do I want to achieve the goal? Why do I want to achieve the goal? A general goal would be, I want to get in shape. A more specific goal would be, I want to obtain a gym membership at my local community center and work out 4 days a week to be healthier. So don't just say, I want to lose weight. You know, everybody talks about their resolutions for the year. How many pounds? How are you going to get there? SMART goal has to be measurable. So if there are no set criteria, you'll not be able to determine your progress and if you're on track to reach your goal. So to make a goal measurable, ask yourself, how many, how much? How do I know if I've reached my goal? What is the indicator of progress? And I just gave you the monetary example. Same thing with the weight. I want to lose 20 pounds. Great. By when and by how many pounds do you need to lose per week? Building on that specific goal above, or that I mentioned earlier, I want to obtain a gym membership at my local community center, work out 4 days a week. Every week I aim to lose 1 pound of body fat. Now it's measurable, and in 20 weeks, hopefully you would have achieved that goal. When we talk about achievable, the goal has to be both achievable and attainable, and this will help you figure out ways that you can realize what your goal is and work towards it. The achievability of the goal should be stretched to make you feel challenged, but defined well enough that you can actually achieve it. So ask yourself, do I have the resources and capabilities to achieve the goal? And if not, what am I missing? What if there's no community center or no gym? And have others done it successfully before? Sure, people lose weight all the time. Making your goal realistic is that the goal can be realistically achieved given the available resources and time. A SMART goal is likely realistic if you believe that it can be accomplished. So ask yourself, is the goal realistic and within reach? Is the goal reachable given the time and your resources? Are you able to commit to achieving that goal? So again, if you want to look at this in money terms, I'd like to make $1 million this year. Great. Your salary is $56,000. How are you going to make $1 million if you only have a salary of $56,000? Now, if you're in sales and you work on commission, well, if you sell a whole bunch of stuff, boom, you might reach that $1 million. But again, if you're straight salary, no overtime, no commission, it's going to be real hard to get there unless you have a second source of income. SMART goals have to be timely. A goal must be time-bound in that it has a start and a finish date. If the goal is not time-constrained, there will be no sense of urgency and therefore less motivation to achieve the goal. So ask yourself these questions. Does my goal have a deadline? And by when do you want to achieve your goal? So if we were going with that 20-pound scenario and we said 1 pound a week, that's 20 weeks. So if you were to say by mid-year, July 1st, I want to be down 20 pounds, you're allowing yourself that 6-week buffer. Could be Easter, maybe you go out for dinner on Valentine's Day or something like that. You celebrate a little too heavily on St. Patrick's Day. You're giving yourself a little buffer, and then you'll get back on plan. So If you were to say, on August 1st, I will obtain a gym membership at my local community center in order to be healthier. I'll work out 4 days a week. Every week I aim to lose 1 pound of body fat. By the end of August, I will realize my goal if I lose 4 pounds of fat over the course of the month. See how all of these building blocks in SMART help you get there. So oftentimes individuals and businesses will set themselves up for failure by setting general and unrealistic goals, such as I want to be the best at X. The goal is vague with no sense of direction. SMART goals set you up for success by making the goals specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. The SMART method helps you push further, gives you a sense of direction, and helps you organize and reach your goal. So what are your goals for this year? What have you decided? And if you haven't taken the time to do that, I would say take tonight, maybe this weekend, both for either for business goals or personal goals, and you know, write them down. And then if you use that an acronym SMART, hopefully it will help you. So again, SMART is specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. So whether you want to do it for your business, whether you want to do it for personal, have a goal and be working toward it. You'll find that in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of coronavirus, working towards your goal will keep your mind off of other things. My goal is to lose 60 pounds. I know I'm not going to do it all at once. I'm already down 20 pounds since I started last November. I have a doctor who told me that he doesn't want me to look at it as a big number of 60. Look at it as if you lose 1 pound a week, in 52 weeks, you're really close to your goal. You would have lost 52 pounds. But he put it another way. He said, the average male bowling ball weighs 16 pounds. So when I talked to him the other day and I said, hey, I'm down 20 pounds. He goes, no, you're not. I go, yes, I am. I looked at the scale. He said, no, you're down one bowling ball. And what he wanted me to imagine was trying to carry 4 16-pound bowling balls wherever I went. Work, home, driving, could you carry 4 bowling balls? And I said, that's impossible. Nobody could carry 4 16-pound bowling balls. He goes, you're already doing it. It's just all around you. So what I've noticed is by losing 20 pounds, legs feel better, back feels better, mood is better, pants fit a whole lot better. So now I'm working on that next 20. And if I can get to 32 pounds loss, which is another 12 pounds, which should hopefully be done in the next, you know, 2 to 3 months, then I'm down 2 bowling balls. And I'll keep you posted on my progress as the year continues. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inchamberradio.com. We'll be right back after this break.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy and Gano Enterprises here in Flemington, New Jersey. And this program is all about you, small business owners, small business employees, people who are trying to make it through the pandemic. Interesting statistic, last night I saw that over 110,000 restaurants across the United States have closed and will not reopen as a result of the pandemic. So anybody who doesn't believe that there's an economic impact to what's going on with the restrictions placed on restaurants is sorely mistaken. And we need to get back to work as quickly as possible. Showing you that the coronavirus has an impact on large organizations, the NRA, or National Rifle Association, has filed for bankruptcy, saying it will reincorporate in Texas. This is a restructuring plan aimed at moving the influential gun group to Texas. It comes as they are suing or being sued by New York State for corrupt political and regulatory environments. And so we'll keep an eye on that. They say they should be able to come out of it within 6 months, but that it's a necessary move in order to keep that organization viable. All right, let's talk about some great interview questions that you can and should be asking if you want to weed out bad candidates. Now, we're getting to the point where a lot of businesses are going to have to start rehiring or re-onboarding employees. And there's 10 great and creative interview questions that you can ask to weed out some of your bad candidates. And a gentleman said something very interesting to me yesterday. He said, "I feel as if I am in competition with the federal government. He has plenty of jobs to fill, but he can't fill them because people don't want to come off unemployment. They're making a little bit more than the job offers, or they're happy just sitting at home on the couch watching TV all day. And so at that point, there's just no motivation for them to go back to work." That's a whole different conversation for another day, but right now let's talk about these interview questions. And if Jim Lynch is listening from Regional Personnel, I'd certainly like his comments on these as well. But interviews are always an excellent way to get to know your candidates, and for the candidates, it's a good way to get to know the company. But it's not always a piece of cake to distinguish between candidates that will do well at your company and those who will exceed expectations. Sometimes it's even challenging to identify the candidates that just won't be a good fit. Every company's made a hire that for one reason or another just didn't work out. Some individuals seem perfect on paper, but once they're hired, their performance slips, their attitude changes, or they're just downright toxic to your company's work environment. So these kinds of employees affect your overall business performance and your bottom line. A Harvard Business School study found that hiring a toxic employee costs your company twice as much money as hiring top talent. Now, while it may seem difficult to separate ideal candidates from those that know how to interview well, here's a list of 10 creative questions to ask in an interview in order to weed out individuals that just aren't right for your company. So here's the first one. What excites you about potentially working for our customer or for our company? Now, why this question matters is it's going to give you an idea of how thorough the interviewee researched your company, if at all. And you can hear them say for themselves why they'd fit in well. Whether they're interested in your company culture, excited by the challenging goals, product line, or something else noteworthy about your company, you'll be able to tell who has given some thought to where they submitted their application rather than just sending in their resume to every company that's hiring. Those that can pick out something distinctive about your company are often the ones who will stick around as well. A couple of red flags to look for is those that can't nail down something specific about your company likely haven't done their research or have submitted their application blindly to dozens of other companies and will just take the best offer once it comes through. The second question are, what are some characteristics about your favorite boss? Now, why does this question matter? It's very simple. You'll be able to understand what type of management style they work best with, and you can get a sense for how your relationship with them will be. This also encourages them to think about their boss in a positive light, and if that seems impossible, they're probably not the best fit for your company either. A couple of red flags is an inability to name any positive characteristics or someone that mentions the opposite of your management style. For example, if they say they enjoy that their manager gives them complete autonomy to make decisions and your company does not, more than likely it's not going to work out. What's something that you like about your current role or a previous role? Even if they are in a role that's totally wrong for them, your candidate should be able to name a couple of things they enjoy about their current or previous position. So pay attention to what drives their excitement, too. Someone that only talks about the social aspects of their job may not be the best fit for a position that requires a lot of heads-down time. A couple of red flags to look for is a candidate who is unable to name positives or is more focused on company perks rather than their own work-related tasks. The fourth question is, what's a critical piece of feedback that you've received and how did you respond to it? This question matters because handling feedback well is necessary for every role because everyone has areas where they can improve. Candidates should be able to talk about a specific instance and how they reacted as well as how they've adjusted since. A couple of red flags, someone that can't think of a time they've received negative feedback or someone who discounts the legitimacy of the feedback. This type of candidate will likely be difficult to manage. Tell me about the career accomplishment that you're most proud of. Now, this is something that everybody at some point in their career should be able to list, something that they're proud of that they did. It's a great opportunity to hear from your candidate about what milestones excite them in their role. This question will give you insight into what motivates them and how they approach challenges. It should shine a light on if they work better as a team player or on their own individually. Now, on a red flag side, a candidate who uses their response as an opportunity to brag about their individual achievements without mentioning the company impact, or the candidate is only looking out for themselves, not a team player. Then ask them about a time when you were asked to perform a task outside of their job description. This question matters because it's likely that there will be times when your employees have to step outside of their traditional day-to-day responsibilities and perform tasks that weren't included in the original job description. The ability of an employee to be flexible for not only you, but your clients as well, is incredibly important. The best candidates will highlight how their willingness to perform the extra tasks helped them grow in areas they otherwise wouldn't have been able to. A couple of red flags to look for is someone that was disgruntled by having to go above and beyond for their company or client. And this shows inflexibility and that they're not really a team player. 7, tell about a specific experience you think is most relevant and will make you successful in this role. Now, the question matters because the candidate will be able to tell you exactly what makes them a good fit for the role, even if they don't have every single qualification. If they can detail how their past experience is relevant and helpful to the role, then their lack of years in the position shouldn't matter. A couple of red flags to look for is someone that uses a lot of buzzwords to describe themselves rather than identifying specific examples of how their experience matches up. The 8th question would be, tell me what skills you're looking to develop further in your next role. Now, why does this matter? Well, the question offers a glimpse into what your candidate hopes to accomplish and should demonstrate their willingness to grow in their role within your company. All candidates should have a desire to learn more and constantly strive to improve. So this question can make sure they're setting their sights on progressing their skills. Red flags? Candidates that name skills that are required for the current position or candidates that can't think of any areas that they can improve on. The 9th question is, tell me what makes you most interested in this role and what makes you the most concerned. Now, why this matters is because a candidate can be honest with you about their passions around the role as well as where they need a little more help and if the person is the ideal person. A balance of confidence and transparency is necessary when answering this question, so make sure that both parts of the question are addressed. Additionally, how a candidate talks about their challenges is a good indicator of how will they deal with conflict or difficult conversations in the workplace. A couple of red flags on this one to look for is someone who is only answers half of the question. So if they say to you, why are you most interested, but they don't answer why are you concerned, that's a red flag. Or if they list too many concerns. Everyone will need a little guidance at first, but they should be qualified enough to feel confident they can handle most of the responsibilities without assistance. And then finally, what questions do you have for me? And this question is important because it's not a creative question, but the answers given can really be insightful and show who is really passionate about your company and who just wants to know how much paid time off they're going to receive. Each candidate should come prepared with a few questions to ask about your company, the team, and the role they're applying for. And if there are several rounds of interviews with different interview employees, the question should be tailored to what that individual will have knowledge about. For example, if a candidate meets with human resources, their hiring manager and the CEO, questions about their day-to-day responsibilities shouldn't be geared toward the head of the company. Red flags to look for: someone who hasn't prepared any questions or is mainly concerned just with vacation and benefits. A bad hire can cost your company much more than you'd expect, so make sure you're thorough in your vetting process, including the interview questions you and your team ask. And for more tips on interviews, it's always a good idea to look online. If you can get on the SHRM website, Society for Human Resources Managers, they have some great topics on interviews and interview questions and making sure that you want it to be – an interview should not be an interrogation. An interview should be a conversation. And as you get people talking, that's when you're going to start finding out things. But if it's just – ask a question, answer a question, ask a question, answer a question. Very often, it's too robotic, it's too stiff, and you're not going to get them to open up. Asking them what are their likes and dislikes outside of work. Do they like food? Do they like wine? Do they like sports? You know, find some common ground so that as you get them talking, they'll feel more comfortable about answering other questions. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. My time is up for today. I'm glad you could join me. And we'll do it again next Thursday at 1 o'clock, new time, which a lot of people are still getting used to. They said, you were always there at noon. Now you're here at 1. There's a lot of stuff we have to do to make this show work, including prepping the studio, sanitizing, and things like that. So bear with us as we go through that. And hopefully we'll be back soon and we'll be able to take these things off so that you can see my pretty face that was made just for radio. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it as well, when he said, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook on the show's page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. And for more information about me and my businesses, visit www.jimgano.com. I'm Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody.